come from the previous office. So it's actually not workable, at least for those, for some of these provinces. And we've been trying to see how best they can come out of that situation. So the purpose of this program, we've actually reorganized this particular program, Program 2, to focus specifically on national health insurance and nothing else. And under this, Chair, you'll be aware that we've got the bill that has been tabled at the moment. It's been discussed by the Cabinet Committee. And we're still hopeful that it will reach Parliament in this round, in this financial year, before Parliament goes into recess. But we also looking at models of capitation at the moment, so that in particular we want to get school children, the elderly, people with disabilities, mental health. There are very specific groups that would otherwise not have access to services. So we've identified them, and we will take services to them. We're working with the Department of Social Development, because from the SASA grant, you can actually identify them. So we'll use SASA database to access them, where they are, and take services to them. So this is how we're planning the service for them, and we'll model that as a basis of implementation of NHI incrementally. The e-health strategy, Chair, is under review, but as I speak today, we've already enrolled about 22 million South Africans in 3,000 of our primary healthcare clinic. We know who they are, we know where they are, and out of that, we'll get a subset of the vulnerable groups and get them to get the services as I've referred earlier. And the beneficiary registry, this is what I was trying to explain, Chair. Our target of 2017-18 was that we'll have 15 million people. In fact, that number is sitting at 22 million, and it will increase because we will, like I said, move with speed. We've actually enrolled most of the children, Elena, from school. The Department of Basic Education has shared data with us. As you know, we've been assessing them. Now we have to give them services. We know which groups of these learners have, you know, problems. I know that we've been telling you that we've assessed them, but we've never come back to say we're treating them. So the way we'll do it, Chair, as you know, we do community service. On annual basis, we subject South African graduates, about between 8 and 10,000 South African professionals do community service. Doctors, nurses, physiotherapists, occupational therapists, dietitians, audiologists, speech therapists, and so on. So now that group, because of the cap on COE, in provinces, some of the provinces are not able to absorb them. So we said the best way is to see whether they can be the ones that can help us treat these learners as well as the vulnerable groups. So this is where we are, and I think Dr. Pile will elaborate further on how we are planning this. Meaning we're now taking the NHI project a step further, but we're targeting the vulnerable groups as a special focus. And for this program, also the stock management system, there's been an improvement, but in outer years, Chair, we will not need to expand this further because the cost of just contracting these services, as we look at it cumulatively, it's not going to be sustainable long term, but our view is that for now people are accessing services. They don't have to go back to a clinic and queue. They just go and collect their medication. So it's working very well for now, but we're looking now at long term sustainability, because in the long term our system must work efficiently. We don't have to create a parallel process for people to collect medicines, but for now it's working reasonably well. About 1.9 million are currently receiving their medication through the system, and we'll probably add another 600,000 and so on in this financial year. The user of antibiotics has been monitoring this on an ongoing basis, and we would like to use the information as we monitor and conduct surveillance for the public to know which products are a problem, so that they can be educated with regard to antimicrobial resistance. But in South Africa, I think our data shows that we're doing reasonably well. Traditional practitioners, we would like to come to Parliament and through, of course, the cabinet process to table the Traditional Health Practitioners Amendment Bill, and we'll go again through this process where the traditional healers. So, Chair, where we sit today, we've developed guidelines. We were working on a scope of practice. It was a very challenging process. In a sense that when you look at different categories of traditional healers, they had to agree, particularly between those that are called...
Sorry, teacher, is there a problem with the document, Honorable myself? Is there something wrong with the document? Can I get an indication? Is it a gadget or? No, we will. Please, honourable members, please. We must try to be patient with one another. Please, because I could pick up that there's no concentration. So if it has been explained, it's fine. The content is the same, it's only that it's the issue of the page. So that has been explained. Thank you.
Okay, so I was just explaining that with traditional medicine, some of the things that we had to resolve is we've got faith healers, we've got sangoma, we've got different categories. Now, to determine the scope of practice, you have to rely on them to determine that. So, Chair, we've been able to do that. We've developed guidelines and translated them to all nine languages. But it's not been an easy task, I must say, Chair, because to get all of them to agree has not been easy. If you recall, Chair, they came to present to Parliament a couple of years ago. So we've just taken most of those comments to try and address them in this process, including proposals for amendments to the Traditional Health Practitioners Bill. The next one, Chair, is about the transparent pricing system for medicines. On an ongoing basis, we publish price adjustments, and these are gazetted. And I think the challenge we have with this process of a single exit price, a chair, is that because of the rand dollar fluctuation, sometimes it defeats the purpose. We may get good prices, and the because of the exchanges, we have to review from time to time. But Dr. Pili will explain that. With regard to facilities, both primary healthcare and hospital, what we did, because like I said, Chair, the problems with the performance of the health systems and the ongoing complaints that we get from patients, we conducted the patient experience of care surveys, both in hospitals and clinics, and these surveys have been concluded. We've got two reports now of what people feel and what people say about the services that they're getting in clinics and in hospitals. And Dr. Andrews has organized that. And we would like to do this on a regular basis so that we use this as a barometer to establish whether people are happy or not happy with the services that they are getting. And equally, we are evaluating the NHI Phase 1 process, and we will set this up as a formal evaluation process. From these learnings, we'll use that as a basis of monitoring how NHI over a period is going to be implemented, and from those lessons, make improvements or adjust accordingly. On Program 3, Chair, this one is a disease-specific program, HIV, AIDS, TB, maternal and child health. We've actually integrated that with other diseases, non-communicable diseases. Our view has been that, Chair, when people present in a facility, they don't go for HIV, AIDS on a Monday, and then they say, okay, we'll do hypertension on a Wednesday and Friday diabetes. So the way we plan the services, we don't plan them to suit individuals. So we would like to reorganize, and as part of this whole process, such that when you go to a facility, you can be assessed fully. You don't have to go multiple times because different clinics are organized on different days. So we would like to remove the burden from individuals. So under this, Chair, the current number of people on ARVs is 4.2 million, and we'll be increasing these over a period. But what is important is understanding and knowing how many people remain on treatment, because it doesn't help to initiate treatment and stop or not sustain the program. So we're going to do a national health screening and testing campaign, and this is not going to be confined to HIV, STI, TB. It will include non-communicable diseases as well. And we are also going to try and find the missing cases for TB so that we can reduce the number of people with active TB, but also those with latent TB. To reduce under 5 mortality, we'd like to reduce under 5 to 33 per 1,000 live births. And we've recognized that for us to achieve this, our EPI program will have to be strengthened. We just conducted a review of our EPI program, and it's quite clear from the review that we'll have to strengthen the program. Under Program 4, primary health care, we'd like to ensure that our district health system is functioning, environmental health services are strengthened, particularly in preparation for NHI. Malaria elimination, we've seen increase in the malaria cases over a number of months more recently, and we had enrolled ourselves as one of the countries that are going to see elimination of malaria in 2020. but I think we'll obviously have to extend the years, seeing that the Limpopo cases have just gone up, and we're working with a dedicated team in Limpopo. As part of the implementation of international health regulations, we conducted a joint external evaluation mainly to look at our level of readiness as a country and the capacity that we have. And again, the district governance and management and leadership, the number of districts that are compliant, that have district health management offices, but also the number of PHC facilities that have committees that are functional. In this financial year, we'd like to see every single primary health care, as well as a community health center. Each one of them must have a functional committee, clinical committee. And they must also have reports that show that they are functional. So we'll not only assess them, but work with them to achieve that level of functionality. We would like to improve the quality of services at primary healthcare facilities through the ideal clinic model. So in this financial year, we would like to go beyond the 1,000 threshold to add additional 400. And equally, we like I said, we're targeting vulnerable groups. We also want to improve access to people with disabilities. For the hospitals under Program 4, we want to have the ideal district hospital just to ensure and assess and measure the performance of the health system. Like I said earlier, this is the weakest areas that we've identified, that even if the disease programs are doing well, we're not seeing that with the health system. But also the municipalities. We would like to work with the SALGA and ensure that the major health care risks are addressed, and there's also adherence to the health care risk waste norms and standards. For the environmental health services, for the 52 districts, on annual basis, we'll audit the environmental health services of these municipalities and check their norms and standards and check whether they perform their environmental health functions. What we're doing, I mean, we audit them, but we've also established that just auditing and producing a report is not enough. We probably need to convert that audit into actionable response where we look at areas of weakness. So because SALGA is a member of the National Health Council, we've asked SALGA to start use presenting on these reports and indicating how we can work together and improve these areas. And for the district mental health, we're going to take 10 districts. For each province, we'd like them to at least make sure that they've got health teams in each district. So we'll spread them across, but we will monitor 10, but every province must make sure that they've got these teams. The assessment that we conducted, we actually assessed all of them. We assessed the mental health services of all provinces, and we actually got a very mixed picture. And not one province has fully functional mental health service. So it's a mixed bag. So what we'd like to do is just to pick the risk areas for each province and focus per province in those particular areas. And for people with, like I said, we're prioritizing the vulnerable groups. And we have a list, Chair, of the physiotherapists, optometrists, audiologists, occupational health therapists, what they do community service, and when they finish, provinces do not have money to absorb them. So we thought we could actually ask them and contract them and ask them to be the ones responding to support the provinces, particularly where provinces can't cope or they don't have additional hands or resources. So this is the best that we can do. Treasury's view is that in terms of intergovernmental relations, as National Department of Health, we can't do that because our competence is not to render services. So we said we'll find a way perhaps to work with provinces to do this, because we know these are people, they are out there, they don't necessarily have access. So we've designed the services in this way, but we'll be working with the provinces. So next week we'll be working with provinces to discuss on how to implement and how to make these services accessible so that the referral system works, because it's not going to help to do it as an isolated program outside the health system. Under Program 5, this is largely a program that is aimed at hospital services and as well as tertiary services and health workforce management. And in this case, like we said, the 10 central hospitals, we've worked on their organizational structures and the generic structures. And when we costed the structures, the reaction was that the proposed structures were a little bit costly. In fact, Chair, this is work that was undertaken on our behalf by the Department of Public Service Administration. The reason why we asked the Department of Public Service Administration is that it's actually their competence. They have to approve. So we thought if it's them coming up with a proposal on how the generic structures should look like, it would help us also to fast-track implementation. And we're also responding to some of the comments that were made when we presented that why don't we pick some key hospitals and improve their performance. We said, we'll look at their functions, look at their structures. But when we did the costing, it turned out that they're really costly. But we'll go back and look at what is workable. And in terms of performance, we had targeted about 43 hospitals that we'd like them to meet standards, the national cost standards. And we'll not stop at assessing them, but we'll also work with them for them to meet these requirements. Chair, because of the, again, response to the concerns about oncology services, we've also included oncology services to come up with an improvement plan. Again, under Program 5, we are seeing increasingly, Chair, that in some of our hospitals, the capacity is they are really under constraint, particularly for obstetric services. So we're deliberately focusing on this because this is where a significant litigation cases have been focused by lawyers. So and we're just concerned that it may drive away obstetricians from undergrad. In fact, it's happening. The number of people doing a postgrad obstetric and gynecology and obstetric is decreasing. So we would like to make an investment in that area. And with regard to emergency medical services, on this one, we've come up with it with guidelines, with policy, with regulations. We've done all of that, Chair. But would like to start working with provinces to assess them and check what their level of compliance is. Some of them said it will take them a little bit of time to comply, but we'll keep on using these tools to monitor how well the emergency medical services are performing. And for infrastructure, Chair would identify the number of facilities that had to be compliant to certain norms and standards, particularly new ones, so that they are compliant. And equally, those that must be constructed, those that must be revitalized and refurbished. And in terms of those, we'll work incrementally. But the approach is that as the ones that need to be replaced in particular are constructed, we have to ensure that there's a maintenance plan for all of them. For human resource for health, we're looking at the PESAL data, particularly for HR. We finished the WISEN work, and we're also doing WISEN based on the HR plan for the hospital level care. We finished the primary health care. We're busy with our hospitals. And for the medical intern and concept, like I was saying, Chair, we look at the numbers that we not only place, but also to say once they finish, there must also be a continuous program for them to provide services, even if they cannot necessarily be employed, but at least people can access those services through other means, and it's the basis on which we are planning the program for National Health Insurance. We're currently reviewing our human resource for health strategy as well as the nursing strategy, and as part of our plan to implement the health, employment, and economic growth, the report that was released, where South Africa was leading together with France, and also preparing for the return of Cuban students. We've got over 700 that are returning this year, and it's a huge undertaking, Chair, because every university has to be involved in the last leg of their training. And all we now have nine medical schools, Chair, including Limpopo. All nine of them are busy, as I speak, signing agreements, because I have to sign agreements for them to agree that they are all going to do the last leg of training, so that the burden is not just on one university, but all nine provide training. But equally, we have to get the undertaking from provinces that they will provide the training platform. So we've set up a project team. They're busy visiting all the clinics, hospitals, where the students are going to be trained to prepare for their return. So it's quite a huge project, and it's an expanded academic integration program, because we've never done it for so many students. It will be the first time. And as they come back next year, I think it will be even additional number of students that will be returning. And for the management, Chair, we as you know, this year is 100 years of Albertina Sisulu. We established the Albertina Sisulu leadership program in partnership with the University of Pretoria. And we're going to use that, Chair, to celebrate leadership, but also train leaders. So as part of that program, we'll be running a number of programs just to teach people about leadership, management, and also use that to profile a leader of a woman who was also a health worker, who was also a nurse, and so on. So we put together programs for the year in that respect. And nursing education and training, Chair, we've just revived the nursing task team, and we've included in that program younger nurses, Chair, because they've been arguing that when we plan for nursing, we only refer to the retired nurses. and we don't accommodate their views as younger people, and they have certain views about how they see health. They say we're building a health system for their future, but we don't involve them. So what we've done in the task team, we've brought younger nurses, older nurses to bring experience, and the younger ones to bring newer ideas. So, and also to get enriched discussions. So we will be coming with a proposal of the new strategy for nursing, and also norms and standards for a clinical training platform that is integrated, where you don't train doctors by themselves, nurses by themselves, and they only meet in a ward when they are already working. But a program that can start integrating different categories of health workers so that they know how they work as a team, and they don't only work as when they're already qualified. So we're looking at all those. And for the backlog on the blood alcohol test, we would like to eliminate. In fact, if you check, we had said that we wanted to eliminate the backlog in Durban and Cape Town and Pretoria, and we're happy with the performance so far. We're still struggling with Johannesburg, and we'll put a lot of investments in the Joburg lab. The toxicology, I think, is the difficult one, but I think increasingly we will reduce that over time, incrementally. In this financial year, we put a target of 60%. So the last one, about the sale of food and accountability, particularly of public entities and statutory bodies, like with NAPISA, will again await its finalization. Chair, if you recall, our response to outbreaks, whether cholera or listeria and so on, it's going to be determined by how we put surveillance systems, we train field epidemiologists, we appoint environmental health practitioners, and so on. So this is an entity that will be established that works beyond the lab. You know, at the moment they're in NHLS, so they've got a very lab-focused outlook. So you really need a public health institute, that looks at public health in a much broader perspective. And we, again, governance to monitor the entities. They've already presented to you. Dr. Pile was historically overseeing that. We're seeing an improvement, actually, in their performance lately. We've got a handbook for these entities, and we would like to keep on training them. What is missing, Chair, if you look at most of the laws that establish these entities, they include health officials, but we don't have a mechanism of monitoring their performance in these boards. Like, it's almost like they participate in their individual capacity. There's no link between their participation and report back, and we'd like to change that. So we're busy developing their handbook so that they don't just get appointed. And when I say officials, I mean across board, whether national or provincial, or whether they come from other government departments, like higher education and so on. So on budget, I'll ask the CFO.
Thank you, Chair. Just to latch on to what DJ has said, you'll see that our budget in total grew by 11% year on year. We've had some movements within the branches. Administration at 7%, which we think is reasonable. NHI has grown quite a bit with 127%, but keep in mind that we've got additional funds for NHI under personal and non-personal services. Primary healthcare at 14%, HIV at 13%, program 5% and program 6% at 3% growth. Compensation of employees grew by 9% year on year. Our goods and services by 37%, mostly again because of the NHI conditional grant that was added, as has capital. You will see that within the components of the NHI grant, we have information systems, of which most of those will be of a capital nature if we buy computers on behalf of provinces. So just to quickly recap on program one, we've given you a breakdown to show what was voted funds and what was earmarked funds. Earmarked funds are those ones that's specifically allocated by National Treasury. Under Program 1, you will see that we've got a medico-legal committee to be established of 5 million, and in the PSYCHA program, which is specifically earmarked to deal with the provincially ordered outcomes of 8 million. And we've also got a transversal budget in there of 174 million, which is all our office accommodation and leases. So we've had some reports that people feel or FFC feels our administration is too high, but you need to strip out some of these expenses to get a proper feel for administration, as some of those are transversal issues. So just to recap, we said the medical legal committees and expansion of the psychos is within the first within the program. So on administration, the compensation grew by 6%, goods and services by 6%, transit by 9%, and capital by 139%. Capital mostly also because we have centralized the purchasing of IT equipment for the department. We felt that if all programs have their own allocation, they don't actually spend it, and there's going to be better spend and better control over IT if it's centralized. This is just an explanation of Program 1. Program 2, a total growth of 127%, mostly on capital and on goods and services. You can see the expansion is quite huge. And if I go to the next slide, you'll see what was the result of that. In the 17-18 year, we had quite a bit of destabilization of the grants. But in the current year, we have agreed with Treasury to collapse most of the NHI grants into a few components, of which we say it's non-personal services and personal services, interim fund management, and then the ministerial advisory committees. So we think it will give us a better control of all the NHI grant expenditure. And when I do the presentation on the personnel and non-personal services, you will see the breakdown of that specifically to this program. So just to recap, that additional funds of 700 million for the NHI, and NHI was structured, it was centralized, the NHI grant is allocated to goods and services as well as the capital expenditure, where it was previously mostly under goods and services, the conversion of the DRG allocations to goods and services, and we also continued to transfer that out to the Western Cape. Our program 3 grew by 13%. Obviously, as I said, some of the NHI conditional grants is now taken up into Program 2. And capital, there was a reduction mainly because of the HPV vaccine grant that is now a direct grant, and there's no need for us to purchase on their behalf any of these features. To give you an idea, the earmarked funds for the 18-19 year, it's going to be under condoms, it's going to be one of them. The communication campaign was additional to that. There's earmarked funds on HIV of 333 million, and we also have a comprehensive HIV grant of 18 billion. What was added or stripped out of that grant was the community health workers, and it's now separately ring fenced within the HIV grant. There was a transfer of budgets from public universities that was shifted to the Department of Higher Education, which affected our goods and services. The conversion of the HPV grant will now be a direct grant and not an indirect grant anymore from this financial year. The inclusion of community health workers, as I said, within the HIV conditional grant. There was a significant reduction of our condom allocation over the last two financial years. The Treasury felt that the expenditure wasn't up to scratch, although most of it gets done by the provinces. Our program 4 has got a 14% increase in total. Again, a reduction of 96 in capital is the bigger one, and mainly because of the IT services that were centralized, and goods and services by 27% growth. The biggest reason for the growth in goods and services was the earmarked funding for the NDC prevention and health promotion of 50 million that was added to this program. And you can see also that the 50 million that was there previously has been removed and is now taken up into the NHI program, which is under program 2. Program 5, by 5% growth, mainly again because of the movement into the program 2. But we've also got earmarked funds still on the IUSS, which is on our infrastructure. Our revived grant, in-kind grant, has shown a slight reduction, about 6% year on year. And the revived grant that goes to provinces is total about 5 billion. In this grant also, we have the National Digital Service Grant, 12 billion. And within that grant, allocated to Gauteng, is a 200 million for the Nelson Mandela Children's Hospital. So this is just to recap there. Program 6 grows slowly at 3%, reduction of goods and services at about 90% and capital by 10%. And the main reason for this is that SAPRA will now be seen as a public entity, and that they will be catered for under the transfer line. So this is the biggest reason why the reduction is there on those two items. The transfers to our entities are all earmarked funds, like the NHLS, MRC, SAPRA, and the office. Compensation fund, as you saw this morning, is about 65 million. It's also earmarked, and it's part of our transfer agreements to these entities. Briefly on the conditional grants, the direct grants allocations, the training grant grew by 5.6% in line with the allocations by National Treasury. The tertiary service grant by 6.2%. Also included there, obviously, was the issue of the Nelson Mandela Children's Hospital, which was included. The HIV grant by 13%, of which the biggest item was the community health workers, that is now ring-fenced. The revived grant by 2.9%, very slow growth in that. We also want to encourage provinces to use that money for maintenance. And as I said, the HPV grant will now be a direct grant, and there's no money for us in this financial year. So that's why this now becomes a grant with its own grant framework to be transferred. The indirect grant has got some amendments to it. I did say to you that the division has, in terms of non-personal and personal services, and if you break down the non-personal services, you will see that we were allocated for CCMDD at 360 million, which is quite a big increase, about 60%. The other clinic component showed a reduction, about 33%, but this money was taken up into school health services, if I remember. The capitation model is still there, although we have to agree with Treasury on the best way of spending those funds. Information systems showing quite a bit of growth, and it's mostly on the CCMD and the information system, the patient information systems. Although the expenditure this year was slow, the uptake is much better, and we should be able to spend most of the capital funds there. The contracting funds at 221 million, that's contracting in. Contracting out was some of the funds added, 100 million. Mental health services at 80 million. School health at 111 million, under 111 million. And other priority services, which include cancers, about 200 million. So if you look at the 700 million additional plus the 712, then that's about 2.3, and including the NHI revived money in that grant, in a total is about 2.3 that is under the indirect allocations, and mainly for NHI. So actually that in brief is just the summary of the financials.
Just to say that the HDP is based on the NDP, and like I said, the focus is small health systems, but obviously we'll have to still continue to address the outcomes and focus on implementation of national health insurance. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, teacher. Members, question? Honorable Wilson, Honorable Ndaba. In that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. At the outset, and I've got a whole lot of questions, but I'm working through them. I'll come back to some of them. I just wanted to deal with Program 1 and in particular your targets with regards to getting four provincial departments with improved audits. And you talked about the regression of the, Northwest and Limpopo. May I say that Limpopo has not transgressed. It fell off the bus. It is 1.7 billion rand in the red. And the doctors, the hospitals and services there have gone so far back. I cannot understand why this department is not under administration. The situation there is absolutely horrendous. And I want to deal just very quickly with your where you've moved healthcare workers. The budgets have been reallocated to be ring-fenced for healthcare workers. And again, I'm going to talk about Limpopo because it's close to my heart. It's where I'm from. The department in Limpopo, we had about 462 NGOs, NPOs in the healthcare sector there who dealt who had healthcare workers, about between 15 and 20,000 in total. The department has now cancelled all of the contracts, memorandums of understanding, etc., with every single one of those NPOs and has put it out to tender for four. Now, all of those NPOs did not qualify to tender, for starters. They were told that from the 1st of the April, no longer would any of them be receiving their subsidies, and that the department would decide which healthcare workers would be employed by the four companies who were granted the tenders. In light of what you're telling me, and in light of what's happening out there, there's a huge divide. And we now sit with close on 15,000 healthcare workers in Limpopo potentially unemployed. These are people who service people in their homes, their beds, who cannot feed themselves, who cannot defend themselves, who need bathing, and all of that kind of thing. We now potentially are unemployed, having spent, and some of them have been working in those communities for 15 years and longer. We're potentially facing another life is a demeanor situation, because those people now do not have access to healthcare workers. In light of what you've ring-fenced, please explain to us how this is supposed to work, because I really need to find out what's happening. I need your assistance to find out what is happening in Limpopo with regards to this, because we are talking about, you're telling us one thing, and Limpopo is doing entirely another, and it's most disconcerting. And if you need it, I have all the documentation. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, you know, when you look at the performance of provincial departments and you take what is happening in hospitals and clinics in terms of service delivery, from 2014 till now, all of us, even the department themselves, can tell that all is not well. And in my thinking, I thought, you know, in this term or in this financial year, the department will consider having one of their indicators for one of their indicators for performance of provincial departments in terms of service delivery. And when I don't see it, Chair, I was just asking myself where I'm seated, that are we serious to improve the quality service in our facilities or what? What is going on? Is there anything that the department can do in order to improve what is happening in the provincial facilities and hospitals? Because we can't act as if we don't see what is happening in our facilities. Some of the problems, you know, even though, you know, there was somewhere DG was talking about a service that they wanted to render, but in terms of treasury regulations, they said they are not a service delivery department. So, you know, where I'm seated, I'm very frustrated myself because I don't see the department helping the provincial departments to improve service and to improve the way their status are. We have done oversight, Chairperson. We have looked at the facilities. We've been looking for this thing called ideal clinic. Even today, Chair, me, where I'm seated, I cannot confidently tell you that really there is something that is called an ideal clinic. So I'm not even sure whether do I want to engage with this thing, whether is it correct for us to pass budgets and allow the department to transfer or whatever. But for me, I don't see any progress. I'm trying to be honest to myself first. Because where in my constituency, in Gauteng, I go to clinics, I go to, and I see a long queue, and I see sometimes they tell me that there's no treatment, there's no what, it's high, everything is falling apart for me. It's like health is going down, 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 down. There's nothing that is appeasing that I can say as an honorable member that there is something that is happening there. So, Chair, I thought maybe in this term, the department is going to have one of their key indicators, a priority to improve the situation of our provincial department, of our provinces, especially in health. It's even worse with the issue of life as a demeanor. When the DG was saying there's no province that has got a fully fledged mental health facility, you know, I became more worried. Because me in Gauteng, I was checking even those NGOs that they are claiming to be rendering the service. And the more I go and visit there, is the more I become scared. So, Chair, maybe the department today, they can tell us if there is any framework or strategic plan that they have to improve the mental care services. So that, you know, we can be convinced even ourselves to say, at least we are not going to experience another life as it means. And then when coming to... what do you call them? The food inspectors. When you think of... Environmental health inspectors. Yeah, right. Thanks. Honorable Lucy. I was thinking that, you know, the department should have done something. You know, I go to Pick and Pay, and I still see... Polons, Viennas, and so on and so on. And I'm told it's the same, there's there's a company that is from coming from overseas that is supplying all these factories with what they are doing. They are manufacturing the balloon or whatever. Okay, now we will see your issue then. And I get worried, Che, that by now, health department should have done something, you know, in order to protect our citizens. That company by now shouldn't be importing or exporting whatever they are doing to South Africa. Because, Che, this is reality. If government is not protecting the citizen, that means even us who are happy about litigations. We have 180 deaths for now. And if we leave all those labo pick and pay and whatever, not our factories that are doing our balloons and so, we buy them in Woolworths. They say, Chair, it's one company that is supplying that thing. Why is the department not taking this thing serious and stopping that country not to supply that thing in South Africa? Please.
Honorable Mahlalisi.
No, thanks. Let's welcome the presentation by the DG. And let me start by saying I will have thought that the DG will take us on board on the reduction of the indicators. Because that's what you did last year, and the argument was that no, those are provincial competences. And then you did the same again this year, but the argument is different. According to the Auditor General's briefing, the argument is about the streamlining of the departments in preparation for NHI. I would have thought that the DG will then, when present program 2, will begin to reflect that, and the APP must begin to reflect that streamline. I've not heard that, I've not seen it. How is the streamlining of the NHI begins to remove 13 targets from the very same NHI as well? From the very same NHI that we are streamlining, we are removing 13 targets. Program 3, we are removing 14 indicators. But how is it streamlining to NHI? That removal of those 14 indicators. Program 5, you've removed 10. If you can just get a briefing, how is it the removal of these 37 odds indicators begins to streamline the NHI so that we're in the same page and understanding. How is, and what does streamlining mean? To what extent, therefore, will this so-called streamlining and the removal of these 38 indicators affect performance? Where are these indicators gone to? Who will be performing it in that process of streamlining? Because you have not said now, no, you have not argued in the same way you have argued last year, said, no, this belongs to provinces. So if it has been taken out, where is it gone to? in the process of that streamlining. If you can just get that explanation so that we understand that. And then under Program 1, taking into consideration the issue that DG have raised around the financial liquidity of provinces, I would have thought that there will be an indicator that must begin to address that problem. Because if you have got 16 billion rand of accruals, it's a big problem. Because it means all the plans, or most of the plans of provinces, are not correct. They are misleading. And therefore, anything that we are saying will be achieved by provinces, how is it going to be achieved? Because what they have said, put in the plans that they are going to achieve, is not budgeted for. Because now in April, May, they will start paying all the accruals. They will not be performing what they are supposed to perform because they don't have budget for that. So I would have thought that as part of the, because you have identified that as a big problem, under administration, under CFO, there will be an indicator that begins to say what should be done about that problem. Because we can't pretend, because this problem has been recurring for years, and it's not reducing this thing. It's increasing. That goes to the question of wasteful and fruitless expenditure as well, which has been increasing year in and year out. Now it's going to more than a billion rand. I don't know the outcome of this financial, of this audit outcome, what you'll say. But the outcome of last year, it moves from about 800 and something million to more than a billion rand. And there seems to be no both political and administrative will to intervene and deal with the matter. And we can't pretend as if we don't see it, that it's happening. The issue of irregular expenditure. You will recall that TG, on a quarterly basis, when we want progress on the expenditure, especially on conditional grants and what, there will be challenges around procurement, supply chain, and all those things, and that relates to irregular expenditure as well. I would have thought that at some particular point, therefore, we'll have to pay special focus, because these monies are monies that must improve service, but they are irregularly spent. There's a lot of fruitless and wasteful expenditures, and it has become business as usual. So I would have thought that at some particular point we'll have to begin to see how do we intervene in this thing in a practical way. That begins to arrest this problem, because it's going to catch up with us, and you will find a situation where provinces, all of them, collapses, as Ndaba is saying. I sent a picture to the chair during the recess, where in one day I was sent by this picture by communities who were sleeping on the floor at Rob Ferreira Hospital. And they arrived in that hospital 6 o'clock in the morning, and to sleep on the floor without being attended. The whole day, arriving at 6 o'clock in the morning, nobody attended to them, and they had to sleep in the floor until the following day. So they sent me pictures where they were sleeping on the floor. And they're not just one individual. It was massive. And then I don't think it was just an isolated incident. You know, it just happened on that day. I'm sure it must be a recurring thing, just that other people don't do it, don't take those photos and send it somewhere. So I'm trying to say these are some of the things that are there in provinces. And some intervention had to be made. Otherwise, the health sector, unfortunately, people doesn't separate this national, this provincial, this what. They take health as one. They take government as one. Otherwise, it's no national government, no provincial government. No, they don't know these things. You know? If the system is collapsing, they don't say, no, there's an MEC whom is not doing his work. They say, no, the Minister of Health is not doing his work. Because that's how they understand it. Well, coming to program two, maybe it's premature, but we'll just want to understand, because the teacher, I was not sure, was saying, no, the bill will be coming, or it's in the committee, or what. When are you expecting? Because the president in the sauna told the public that the bill will be, as a matter of extreme agent, to be tabled before Parliament. So that's an expectation, that the bill will be tabled to Parliament. And you, I'm sure you'll have seen the program of Parliament. We're here until the first week of June or so. And then from there we're gone. Until somewhere mid-August. Then we are here, when we come back in August, we deal with PRRR. And then from there we are gone. We come next year, maybe for SONA. Then from there, Parliament rises. Then we go to elections. So the promise that the president might have made might not be realized if yourself you're not sure. When are you going to be ready to make sure that the bill is tabled before Parliament? And you'll understand that once the bill is tabled before Parliament has got a lot of processes that it must undertake as per the constitutional requirement. And therefore we'll need time, especially taking into the nature of the bill. So the more you delay in tabling it, it means there might be no possibility for this bill to be passed during this fifth term of Parliament. And when new Parliament comes, they will have to start afresh. Start from the beginning again. So those are some of the things that we need to consider and see how best then to improve into them. And then maybe the other thing, Chair, that I thought, since we have finished the first phase of your NHI, which was the piloting site, one would have thought that the plan going forward will then begin to reflect the second phase. When I'm reading it, I'm not sure which how, except what the DG mentioned when he was tabling. But when I look at the plan, I don't feel that, no, now we're entering through this plan. the second phase. Maybe if the teacher can just reflect on that and say, these are the indicators. These are the indicators that are taking us to the second phase of the implementation of the NHI. But as we do that, you will recall that last year we asked to get a report on evaluation, and we said we are still busy with it. We are going to provide that, and that has not happened because the understanding is that before you enter the second phase, you will have done an evaluation of the first phase. And for us, therefore, to understand what has happened in the first phase, we'll only understand through this evaluation report. I'm not sure whether that has been finalized, and if it has been finalized, Chair, we'll appreciate if we can get it. Because as we're starting this second phase, we must understand what has happened in its totality of the first phase, so that we're able to learn from that and see what were the challenges, what the weaknesses, where were the improvement, what were the best things that we can learn going forward as we go into the second phase. The budget is still the same on that program too. There's not much substantial improvement, but we're entering the second phase. That's why I'm saying it's confusing for me, because I don't see any substantial improvement on the budget in phase on two, but we are moving from the first phase to the second phase. So I have expected an upscale in that. That includes your indicators and your budget as well. Taking into consideration, we might not fulfill everything that was in phase one. Some of the things that we might have to roll it over and integrate it to phase two. But as I'm saying, we don't know which are those because we don't have a report that begins to say how have we performed on that phase one. Well, coming to program three, Chair, so just to get a clarification, teacher. The bulk of the budget of the department is on program three, almost 98% of it. But that program has got only two or three indicators or strategic objectives. Yeah, two of them. Are we really saying, and these two intervention, it deals mainly to reduce HIV, STI, and TB infection. But there are no indication how you want to deal with the issue of school health as strategic objective or indicators. The issue of women's health, I'm not sure how is it being attended, but I don't see it. Whether it's a matter that is left to provinces, which provinces doesn't have budget. And then the issue of women maternal health as well. And then how will these three performance indicators, that most of them are not necessarily related to the reduction in the incident and the prevalence of HIV and AIDS, how will it contribute towards attaining this objective? I mean, this issue of the reduction of the incident and the prevalence of HIV and AIDS in the context of this new approach that we've taken of 1990 strategy. The president in the State of the Nation address indicated that, which I'm sure it's an information that was coming from yourself, that we're going to be launching a massive campaign on cancer. Where is it in the plan? And how far are you in relation to that? Because the expectation was that it should have been, if not launched already, in the pipeline of it being launched very soon under Program 4, as the President has indicated. And is it possible, DG, to give us an analysis of, because you recall that there's been always a debate around primary health care being mainly the functions that are performed by provinces and falls under Program 2, which is district health services in provinces. Just to get an indication how each province is budgeting for that service. We understand that on average it's 44%, but that 44% average doesn't give us the proper picture to understand whether provinces are almost budgeting that particular function almost on an equitable basis. And in your own analysis, are provinces budgeting this function that it's mainly located in their responsibilities adequately budgeting for it? And what should be the average percentages in the total budget of each province that should be allocated to this, and to what extent are provinces closer to that budget or percent? You have developed a plan, DG, of the National Mental Health Policy Framework and Strategic Plan. But we don't see in your plan how you're monitoring that plan in its implementation. Because when we called provinces around this plan, the majority of them were found wanting. Kat, I'm sure, was present in all the meetings. She will confirm that. The majority were found wanting around the implementation of that plan. And it is good to develop a plan, a framework and all those things, but you don't have a system to ensure its implementation. It's as good as doing nothing about it, not developing it at all. Because for just being compliant, they now develop a plan, so it's up to them what do they do about it, without putting systems to make sure that they implement those plans, and where they need to be assisted, we assisted. So those are some of the things that I thought in as part of the plan of monitoring and making sure that these plans are nonsense that are implemented, they are done in that way. And then in the document, this plan, this document that you have given to us, the annual performance plan, Program 4, if I'm not mistaken, let me just satisfy myself. Yeah, Program 4. Program 4 does not have quarterly targets. Is it delivering, or it's an omission? Because this does doesn't have any quarterly performance. It only have the normal one, but how we are going to be achieving these indicators on a quarterly basis, there's nothing, it's just not there. How then on a quarterly basis do you monitor the performance of program 4 if there's nothing that you're saying on a quarter, this is what you'll be monitoring and how you will expect performance per quarter? Because it's not there, and the only one that doesn't have, I don't know whether it was an omission or it was planned like that, no, it should not have. And if it was planned, what could be the rationale behind that for it to be treated special and different from the rest of the other programs? Going back to the original issue that I've raised, which also was raised by Undaba, the issues in the provinces, which is very scary. It's very scary. Because the AG gave us a report in the analysis. You see, all of them is red. Most of them is red on human resource, financial management, performance management, procurement, expenditure. Almost all of them is red, except the one that he didn't give to us too, which is your Western Cape, which the AG said, no, they are doing very well, so they are okay. They never failed to give us. Northwest, they could not even get information. That's why it's not even included. They could not even get information from Northwest. and then the one that is trying, although it's full of amber, which doesn't have red, is Free State. But the rest have got red, which tells you that is a big, big problem. And it relates to the issue that I was raising. If under administration there is no system that is put in place to assist them, they are going to collapse in our face, these provinces. They are going to collapse in our faces. Thanks very much.
Honorable Maisel.
Thank you, Chair.
Sorry. Indicate earlier that it's going to be fine that we, I think now, okay, let me put this, we'll have a first round, because we can't keep on, if people have asked questions, they can't again, we'll allow them to answer the questions in the first round and then come back again. I'm raising that because I've Honorable Wilson's hand is up, but those that are for the first time in this round, it's Honorable Maisele, it's Honorable Ngonzo, then it's Honorable James. Which then means, don't ask a number of questions, because we're going to have another round. Okay. Honorable Maisele, sorry for that.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair. We don't want to say things fall apart. The Falcon can no more hear the Falconer, because we can still stem the whole thing. HIV/AIDS pandemic, we have been talking about it for years on end, and we are the best people in the world who are trying to stem the pandemic. Maybe like King Canute, we stand in the shore and say the waves must go back, command the waves to go back. So it's like we are just telling it must abate and disappear, because we throw everything at it, and so we are not getting anywhere. That means we are not doing something right. And we can't keep on doing the same thing over and over again. And you're hoping that a miracle will happen. Now, you said the EMS people in some provinces say it will take them some time to comply. I mean, if they have the call to tell you they are not complying, they will comply at some certain time. What does that mean? You don't say such things and say, well, I will comply in future. For now, leave me alone. There must be consequences. You know, when is there going to be any consequences for non-compliance? Maybe we should bring the hawks here when we discuss these things, and then they enforce compliance, because we can't afford to some people to cock a snoot at us and say they will comply in future gradually. For now, they are not complying. They will comply in some future. This is not a mining company. This is people's lives. If it's gone, it's gone. You can't reverse it. So we need to do something very drastically to force compliance, those who don't want to comply. Yeah, if you get a sense out there that things are not working, doctors are on go slow, others are in other provinces, people are really marching, and there are shortages of medications in hospitals. There is, you have a sense that the people are beginning to despair. Okay, when you go to a hospital and find out there's no medication, and you think that it's all the hospitals that don't have medication, and but we are not told that there is a crisis. There is no money to buy medication. What happened? What happened to the money which was allocated for procurement? So it is very scary indeed. And now the solution, I think, maybe is what we have been advised to do: amend the legislation and take some powers from people who don't know how to use them, and who actually sabotage the whole thing by not doing what they are supposed to do. So if we can amend the Constitution itself, let us amend some acts that will put this leaky ship on an even keel. Otherwise, we are complicit to this, all of us. And we can't say, ish, we saw it coming. We can't say that. We have to do something and do it fast. Time is of the essence here. Thank you.
Excuse me. Chair, I think my questions have been asked. Maybe I should not proceed. Thank you.
Honorable James.
Thank you, Chair. I think I'm also covered largely, but I just want to find out how much money is dedicated to the maintenance of infrastructure and equipment. On the equipment, just to find out, are there maintenance registers in the departments? Because the problem is that the equipment is never, no one cares if it will be maintained or when it should be maintained. That is why we have these issues, big issues on equipment in hospitals and clinics. And also linked to that, the oncology crisis in KZN that continues to dominate in the news, that still, with there's still the same problems, people waiting and not being serviced. And Chair, I also want to say that, you know, at times I feel, when you ask the department, especially about the provinces, it becomes a blame game. The province, the national will say the provinces, they are responsible. But yeah, or should we call the provinces to come and answer the questions, or should we, including the minister himself, that majority, tell you that it is case that it is worth input, but it's not him. That is a worry. Also, I think we do need to know the report on the training of nurses and establishment of nursing colleges, because they are not there on the floor. They are not there. There's a shortage of that. It's been, I think we've said this, I don't know for how many years now, 4, 5 years. Same thing, and it's they're not there. That is the reality. That is why it worries once you think, how is this NHI going to be? Because we can't even maintain the hospital, the clinics that we have. We don't have staff there. And you must remember, the clinics are where our poor of the poor must go. They have nowhere else to go. They don't have a medical aid. And you know, Che, also my this star of Free Estate, Munap, I'm sure it's still the same. Munap, I can assure you it's still the same. It's in a mess. It hasn't been, I don't know what is better, what changed. The merge wand in Free State, I still wonder how did that happen, because when we went there, things were not good. And they were just not good. And I doubt if Monapo, is anything has changed there. And so I must say that the department, you know, it's in a crisis. And when they come and give us a report, everything is going well. But it's not. That is very worrying. It's very worrying. We really need the right report, the true reflection of what's happening, because we know what's happening in our communities. We know what's happening in the clinics. We know people sit there the whole day and they turn back and they must come back tomorrow. We know what's happening there.
No, thank you very much. In this round, just DG, it's quite, maybe we expected, you know, these terms and these systems that are here in Parliament, they are creating an environment that is not, that is frustrating, because it's more about numbers and English. And this thing that you are to come down the line on to give us a report, when as we are seated here, for now it's APP, down the line you are to come back. When we are seated here, we've got an experience of what is happening in our communities. But I want to say to honorable members, maybe it's about time we then said, when you come back, you must give us province, district, province by province, district by district. Because to me, this thing of being general, it's not going to assist us at all. I'm raising this because we know in Cape Town, I'm making an example, I'm not going to go, we know in Cape Town we've got 2 public hospitals that are of the, we assume, that Tigerberg and Groteskier are the, Khayelitsha and the others. I'm saying if we want, really we are correct, we are concerned, correctly so, it is about time now that we call things as they are, because I'm reminded about this because we conducted an oversight in Free State. We went to Manapo. Maybe we are not quite. We have not yet get a report from you back to say what we reported on our report table, our report on the state of Manapo, where we even said to the minister. I personally said, if we had powers, would have closed down Manap. If we had powers at that time, would have closed it down. But on the same side of the coin, we went to a hospital where everything was insourced, and we were told that it is a project it was in a very bad state. I've forgotten that hospital. It was in a bad state, but because of the Office of Health Standard Compliance inspecting it timeously, and it's all about management.
So we're going to be seated here and say things all over again. And I'm not implying that they're not doing the work. Honorable Maisele is correct, because that's where the problem is. Maybe we are to take a conscious decision that let's amend the National Health Act once and for all, because we are going to say this over and over again, that yes, services are at a provincial level through the National Health Act. But Honorable Mashalela is correct. There's this, our people on the down there, which is provincial competency, national competence, they're not interested in that. To them, it is government that is not providing services. I SMS'd you on the 9th of April, forwarded you, DG, forwarded Joe, the office, Joe, she has just come in. I forwarded you, people, the SMS that was forwarded by Honorable Mashalela. Immediately when I received that, I forwarded it to the department. The only person, because I pick up that I don't have his number, and I forgot to check it, was the MEC. I was forwarding it because it was due constituency office, during constituency offices time, but I wanted you to see the challenges in Rob Ferreira that they are still continuing. Nobody from your office, DG, nor from the office of the minister to Joe, is it who? Kasha. Nobody came back to me. I'm seated here with a letter. Somebody has written to me from Northwest. Not about what is happening as we speak, but about the challenges of services that are not there. Communities are not getting treatment. The workforce, the labor movement is there's a challenge. Those that are also on ARVs are getting treatment. So I'm trying to say, as we are seated here asking these questions, we are asking the questions because we are frustrated. We're frustrated because, as much as I don't want to always, because to me it's a very sad, I was traumatized by that process. So I would rather, but at times you are forced to make a, what are the lessons that we are to draw from what happened in Gauteng around the mental health? What are the lessons? It goes back to, I think it's about time that there's an overhaul of the National Health Act, which gives powers to the provincial authority. But you are to supervise, you are to support, and in that support, it's about time that you tell us that, is that support being welcomed, and if it is not welcomed, why? I don't know whether you are aware, DG, that the CCMDD in the Eastern Cape is a. It's alleged, I was saying alleged, they've stopped it. Please check on that. You will be aware that Tower Hospital has been on, look into that. I don't want to accept, and I'm very disappointed, DG. I'm seriously disappointed that at this time there is no movement that is convincing on the nursing, on the new curriculum on nursing, the nursing colleges. What is happening? Maybe when you come back and report, you must give us, because they're saying there are 16 nursing colleges. What is the situation there? I had a number of questions, but I was seated here and I was asking myself that, for how long are we going to be asking these questions? And at the end, things are not happening as, I don't want to go into the, because that's where the challenge is. I don't want to go to the more administrative,
more academic, more professional. That's why I want to go into what every day, where I am staying, I'm closer to a clinic, Ms. Handa. A clinic which was built for a smaller African community at the time. But further, it is servicing more than 5 wards, but it is still the size that it was before 1994 in the 80s, where it was a small community. They will, and I'm saying you phoned the district. Well, I do phone the district. I've stopped phoning the MECs. I'm phoning directly the district, what's in my province, to say, but why this? Now, with, I'm raising all these things with the understanding that this is the APP, the indicators, and whatever. But underneath all this, we are seated with a challenge of a health system in this country, which is in a very serious situation. Other people always say, I like to bring in politics. I will have to, but at times I get a sense that if maybe it's correct, maybe we'll have to look into the system. Should we call the department to come and answer all in those APPs, or should all provinces come here and answer on those APPs, in their APPs, as Honorable Mahlalela is saying? Because in my view, we are barking the wrong tree. We are barking a tree that is going to say, my hands are tied. Because it's the act. We must go and read the act. But still reading the act, that's why I'm saying the support. So it's quite, we are in a very dicey situation. But it's more, we're saying these things over and over again. When I was listening to the DG and listening to questions, I said, gosh, should we really have this session? Because we're doing, should we? Or is it because, and at the end, the systems here in Parliament are not also giving us more time to go out there. And I think when we are living in this, at the end of this term, we must make recommendations. We are going on how we must then go out and how some of these reports are to be structured. I think we will have to see exactly what is it. I know maybe Honorable Mahlalela will say I'm out of order. He's the one who's well placed because he started this after 1994, all this. But as we downline, in 24 years down the line, do we really achieve what we want to achieve by these sessions at the end, when everything is at a mess at a provincial and a district? We will break now, have tea, a comfort break if tea is here, because we must give them a time to respond, because we're going to have a second round. And in the second round, I'm going to be very strict. It's one question, one person, straight to the point. Don't repeat what has been said and what we have asked in the first round, but you are coming it in a different form. That is it, Honorable Members. 15 minutes.
Provincial Treasury, not meeting a one day, Landonians and appropriations. Something like works of good Halapa Provincial Treasuries, all the provinces, MECs, Department, Mutualeti, and Jopal. Because then the guy.
I don't know. It's not me.
But she is not lying. You remember when he was briefing us about India Northwest, that he said to the Premier, please don't take this person. Oh, is this the information that I... Don't take this person and make him an HOD. Because he was not performing in the department, a junior official. Upremia wamthatha kwamenzo HOD. And basket which premier?
They change like you are supposed to be listening to
I'm not listening.
That's the problem. The problem. The babeka abantu abazongo in very senior position. Umntu wakho right. And naye umntu wakho makangakuhlazi so that abantu bangabi nantothetha. Laa nto ndidla ngoyithetha ke kwabantwana. Bathatha nabo. ukuthinta ufike befuna uzoza befuna
ushow off no shayina ngomsebenzi
shayina ngomsebenzi uyasebenza kodwa
ngenxa yento dlalana upitshola lowakhe
sokuza apha uzoziprova uba nandithandana nobani funeka nindibone mna ndizothatha instruction you know sebenzela kanye
lokuba thina sibuza ngokuthi
kube Northwest nina ke you have never been to Northwest. Northwest is a ride. Northwest was one of the best.
But bulo ngubani Northwest?
Bulo HOD lo mfana especially for the minister. Especially for
Chonga, before you say this. Yes, we say please employ us. We've been here for a while. And you must remember I am from the department of it. I worked for 17 years. I went for oversight.
Yes, recording. Is it still recording?
We're saying look, we've been one day trained us for your unemployment.
Thank you,
DG. How you will respond will depend on you in terms of who's going to respond on what, in terms of the questions that have been asked by honorable members. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Thank you, honorable members, for your questions. I would first start with the question about ODs and Program 1 and Limpopo. Chair, what I thought I would start by doing before I answer the questions, just to give you a sense of the budget and how budget is allocated. Our total budget share for this financial year is 198 billion. And of the 198 billion, what you see reflected in our presentation is 42.6 billion. And of the 42.6 billion, 39.3 billion is conditional grants and transfers. So largely, for the voted funds, what remains out of this 198 billion is 3.3 billion. That's all what is kept at national level. So the 3.3 billion, a proportion of that is salaries and some of the regulatory functions. So I can break down and give you a sense what I describe as a facilitatory function. And that facilitatory function is what we are asking about, honorable members. And I would ask the question to support, to facilitate, to help. How much of that can be done? And just using the first question, I like the first one because it's a practical example, and I'm going to cite an example about MOUs that were signed by Limpopo, 463 NGOs, 15,000 health workers who are going to lose their jobs and so on. That example, I'll use a very specific example. There's a Ndlovu a clinic. It's an NGO. It was created a couple of years ago, and it was created based on a development aid, the Dutch government and other EU funds and so on. If you look at where it's located, it provides services to Mpumalanga and Limpopo people. And if you look at that area, the only hospital is Philadelphia, and there are then smaller two clinics. The number of people who are looked after by Ndlovu is probably about between 3,500 to 5,000. And they've been rendering this service on behalf of the two provinces. But obviously Limpopo was paying. Now more recently, they've come to us to say Limpopo is ending their program. And they've looked at the capacity of the two clinics. The two clinics are not going to carry this additional number of patients. So maybe the questions that you'll be asking, and Chair, I've got a clip of the MEC. I can play it for you. I've got a letter written by the minister saying to the MEC, you can't close this facility. After that letter was sent, the very next day she released the press release to say they are going to go ahead. Within 3 months, they will be preparing for the transfer of patients. Now, my question is beyond this letter that has been written, even after the, and I like it when we say life as it means, because that's precisely what happened. And that's precisely what will continue to happen. I can give you the letter that Dr. Pile wrote when he was acting. So I'm saying this facilitatory function and this support function, how does it work? And we can sort of ask ourselves, and I want to premise this by saying the following, honorable members, because it cuts across. You know, it's clearly some of the things are political. And my question is, sometimes it's somehow difficult to solve political problems administratively. If you have a political problem, you can't solve it administratively. You can write letters, you can write as many letters as possible. It's not possible. And I'm going to say why I say so, Chair. In a province, just in the health sector, there are 3 people that we interact with on a regular basis, and the interaction is defined by law. It's not an option. We've got a National Health Act. It defines who must be in the National Health Council. It defines what the National Health Council must do. It defines the functions of the Technical National Health Council. I chair the Technical National Health Council. The minister chairs the National Health Council, but we also have a forum of CFOs. We meet regularly, we sit, we do analysis. We actually meet in provinces, Chair. We sit, we guide. But there's something that we are not discussing, and I'm going to say it's the elephant in the room. The elephant in the room is that as we speak, out of 9 provinces, Chair, 9, 6 of them have been under administration. 6 out of 9 have been under administration. And perhaps we need to understand this administration in terms of the PFMA and also the Constitution. Because of these provinces, Eastern Cape has come out of that. And let me tell you, Chair, how it works, so that perhaps we can reflect a bit, and maybe this is where Parliament can assist. When a province is put under administration, every single decision to appoint, whether to appoint a doctor, a nurse, the Premier's office must approve. It goes through that cycle. So the question is, you cannot run a health service like that, Chair. I mean, we can sit and say National must intervene. It's not going to happen. I can sit in the Premier's office every day. I did it for Life as it means. I sat with the DG of the Premier of Gauteng, Chair. We moved those patients and I pulled back. But I can tell you now, I can actually share with you that once you pull out, things go back to normal. So there's something fundamental about how the constitutional structure works. I don't know whether it's by design or the way it was intended or whether it changed along the way. The fiscal federal system is designed that way. It's the way the Constitution is written. It's the way the Intergovernmental Relations Act is written. But I also think that we should not behave as if we're a unitary state, Chair. We are not. We are not a unitary state. We are a unitary state in paper, but we practice fiscal federalism. That's how it works. This 198 billion could actually do far more. It could do far more. It could do far more. And I'm asking the question, Chair, and why I say so. We have 9 provincial legislatures. When I call my colleagues in the province, they'll tell me we're presenting before our legislature. So the question is, that function of that legislature, for them to report on their APP and everything else that they do, what is the relationship with this one? And how do we get this to work? And I'm being honest here, because these are the things that we should respond to. And I want to also add another one. For all these years, there's only one province that has had stability. And now we see the second province where there is stability. And if you go and look at the results, you can see what stability does. Where you had an MEC who's been there for a while, and an HOD. We saw that with Western Cape. You'll see that with Eastern Cape. In Eastern Cape, you'll see we're seeing an unqualified audit. They had it the first year, and they maintained. In Gauteng, they had unqualified, but we don't know. It's shaky at the moment. Limpopo, unqualified, they regressed. Northwest, unqualified, they regressed. I mean, we can just talk about audits, and I can show you. We meet in one for a year or two, Chair, as HODs, and HOD understands what must be done. The next time you talk to him, it's a new one, and they don't know what must happen. They don't know what must happen, and that's how it has been. So I'm saying that because in Limpopo, Ndlovu did not start yesterday. It's a program that has been working for a while. I can show you the reports. I can show you the retention of patients in that program, but it's been stopped. So we amend the National Health Act. We amend the Constitution. I guess it's a political decision, but the intergovernmental relations. I can show you that it's not because health wants to run a service, but it's because if we have a system where you say these things have to be done, and maybe, Chair, let me tell you what happens in National Health Council so that you know. Every time a policy is passed, one province, and we come back every time, there's one particular province that will say, no, we will not do it. And we come back, we write it, we report. So that we will not do it, does it mean, you know, they decide for that year, they'll just use so much and just do so little, because that's what happens. Western Cape says, no, we won't do all of that, we'll just do this little. So is that where the problem is, to say we're doing too much? Or is it because, you know, we've got all these commitments that we must meet, because it's a reality. The next question, Chair, about listeriosis and the overseas company, I would really welcome the Honourable Member if she can share with us which of the overseas company is she referring to. And I'm raising that specifically, Chair, because I chair the Independent Oversight and Advisory Committee on Emergencies for the World. I've got a report of every country, of every outbreak in every country, and I also know at this point in time that in Yemen we've got cholera and how many people have died in cholera. So if you say it has come, as I speak, Chair, I've brought in experts on food control, the best in the world. They're sitting, as I speak, in NICD, and they're going to be in the country for 3 months. And the decision here is that they will not leave the country until we have gotten rid of listeriosis. So we've activated what we call the Emergency Operating Center, Chair. The Emergency Operating Center with an incident management system. It's not a technical thing, but it's something that happens with every outbreak. Whether, you know, Ebola in West Africa. As I speak, we've got Lassa fever in Nigeria. And we are tracking that. I was just talking about Australia. We'll tell you how many people. It's a report that I get on a weekly basis. And the same team is in South Africa to help it. I know, Chair, that I said Nafisa earlier. The reason we're asking that we should have Nafisa was for us to do precisely that. To do precisely that, to be able to track every single outbreak, no matter how small, and respond immediately, but in an adequately resourced arrangement. Chair, you could have a chemical outbreak, you could have a nuclear disaster, you could have... So the country's response to all of those disasters should be in a coordinated manner. And there are particular approaches on how you do it. So, Chair, I would still go back to say that institute is needed. NICD is operating in an environment where they are lab focused. You need public health focus. You need epidemiologists. You need field epidemiologists. You need your environmental officers to be out there with field epidemiologists. We actually call them disease detectives. You need disease detectives to be out there. You don't detect disease sitting in a lab waiting for a doctor to report from a clinic. So it means you'll only know when they've tested a patient. They must be out there in the field. So, Chair, we really need Nafisa. Protection of citizens, that's precisely what we need. We want to protect our citizens, honorable members. I will beg of you. We have to do this. We have to do this to save South Africans and ensure that outbreaks will be on top of them like that. Chair, I can recount for every single country. Let me give you an example so that you know. You know about Moringa. You probably read about that in the papers. Myanmar. And you probably know what's happening to people in Myanmar. You'll probably know that in Myanmar today, they become a burden to Bangladesh because this is where they've been moving because of the crisis they have. But as I speak today, there is monsoon coming, and it's going to be a cholera outbreak, but the teams are ready. It cannot be that I sit there here in South Africa, I say that, and I'm still waiting for a system because we need a law. Chair, about the reduction of indicators, Dr. Andrews will respond, but also the streamlining. I will ask her to respond. And maybe, Honorable Mahlalela, you might have missed this earlier when I said there's a page missing. And when it went to print, our team, I think it's an error. I don't know how they omitted that page, and we apologize for that. I even asked that we should have an erratum and have the minister table the document again. The regular expenditure, I'll ask the CFO to talk to that, but also wasteful and fruitful expenditure. Just to explain, what is it that they do when they sit in the CFO forum? They go to province. What do they do there? Because they spend, I mean, I've got an official, he's hardly home. His name is Hartley Nevutal. He is hardly home. he spends all his time in provinces, Chair. He's done an analysis. And we've debated this about whether, you know, are provinces underfunded in terms of health, or is it a problem of mismanagement? Our analysis says health is underfunded by 9 billion. Now, you can't get better results. You underfund, the system will collapse. But that's not the only thing, Chair. You've got a system that did not provide for treatment of people with ARVs. And then over a period, you increase the number to 4.2 billion. The same system. It hasn't changed. 4.2 billion. You can't expect a different result. Take a couple of nurses out of the system, you train them on NIMAT. So that gap is created. And that's the reality, Chair. We've done that analysis. So, Chair, we've done an analysis. We've looked at when we started, before we put a lot of people on ARVs, how many people did we have? What was the infrastructure? What was the system? How did it work? Over a period, as we're increasing people, what happened? We've done that analysis. But we're saying to provinces, and remember, now if you're going to add 2 million more, if you're going to do more campaigns, you're adding to the same system. So, Chair, that analysis we did because we're saying we need to take a deep breath because we can't, you don't flog the same horse to get different results when it's already caved in. And we're saying it doesn't matter, Chair. You have to change the way the health system works. It has to change. So we've sat down with provinces, and I agree, they're going to collapse. We've asked Western Cape, we've asked Eastern Cape, because we're beginning to see how they are reorganizing the way the health system works. We say, okay, you're not going to get the 9 billion. It's not going to come. So the question is, how do you work within a constrained environment? An environment where you have reduced budgets. Because they've been told there's no extra money you're going to get. Work within what you have. So meaning, you're not going to have more money to employ more health workers. So how do you then work within those constraints environments? So our analysis show that we either reorganize or we inject more money, but then the concern, Chair, that has been raised is there's a lot of wastage, there's a lot of mismanagement and corruption and so on. So it's a combination of both, of addressing both issues. And we said this is how we're going to go about it. Chair, the pictures that you show me, I get those daily. I can share them with you. I get them daily. But not only that, let me give you an example, Chair. I've got women. Housing does not have a in their hospital. There's only 2 beds where they have extra beds. But Housing, they are cash constrained at the moment. So they're not going to be able to add additional beds. So this is why I was saying perhaps the question we should ask, how do you work within a constrained environment? About the bill, Honorable Mahlalela, this bill has been subjected to 3 legal opinions, 3 written legal opinions, and every time it had to go back for an opinion. And Dr. Pile will tell you that the minister had to intervene to say, but you know, you can't consistently say this bill is unconstitutional. On what grounds? How can National Health Insurance Bill that says we are increasing access be unconstitutional. But all those issues, Chair, have been resolved, and Anban Pile has been part of that team with our lawyers, and the bill is actually with Cabinet Committee at the moment. They were supposed to be sitting this week. So I'm hopeful that we'll still meet those deadlines. With regard to the NHI pilot, the reviews and the evaluation, we've done reviews on annual basis, but the evaluation, Dr. Andrews will tell you how far we are and how those results are going to be used. And we can also share lessons learned, but we do have lessons actually from these annual reviews that we've been conducting. In fact, the basis on which we prepared our APP was informed by those reviews. Chair, it's perhaps maybe the question that we have to ask is, why do we present our APP in this form? It's because it's regulated. I wish I could write this APP differently. I would love to. I would want to. This APP, the way it's written, is regulated. The APP gets audited by the Auditor General, Chair, before it even comes to you. Before we table, the Auditor General must say, yes, it complies. So this is a compliance-driven system, Chair. We want to comply, but compliance comes at a cost. You have to decide whether we just comply in the manner in which we present, yes. But then we'll write it to comply, because that's what is wanted. You want us to write it in such a way that it's... And it's not the Auditor General only. It has to be signed off by DPME. They have to check whether we're complying or not. So we can give you what we have to comply with, format, and so on. It limits what we can write, Chair. It limits what we can write. And perhaps, maybe we have to ask whether should we be running a compliance-driven system in this manner? And we've asked that question ourselves. And the question is, what is the cost of compliance? Compliance before we even say what we're going to do. We have to comply before we submit. So with regard to the allocations, Chair, what we did, because Treasury said to us, in fact, maybe I should present this. We said, if you are to start NHI and you create a fund, you have to establish how that fund is going to work. So we asked Treasury to look for a vehicle that can be used, because it meant we'd have to work outside the system by creating that vehicle to just test NHI. And I'm responding to Program 3 and NHI when Honorable Mahlalela says, I don't see how you allocated. Yes, you won't see it, because there's no vehicle to create a fund. One, you need a law. The second one, even if we created a vehicle, Treasury said the only vehicle you have is to come up with a grant. So this is why you see an NHI grant. But go back and see what a grant. Now, you can't do a major transformational agenda through a grant. Again, it's compliance. You want to do major transformation, then create a vehicle that can help you get there. So we've debated this. We debated the grant. I've indicated that we'll do it for purposes of compliance. But we're hopeful that it will get us to where we need to. With regard to oncology, to cancer, we do have in the APP, Honorable Members, oncology. Mm. We've allocated for that. We've allocated for mental health. The reason we did that, we said we will try and perform those functions from national, despite intergovernmental relations, despite within that grant framework. and see whether it can work and show you the results that, yes, we have saved so many lives, yes, we have treated so many people. We will try it that way. We'll see if it works. If it does, then maybe it will be evidence that the system must change completely. Maybe it will be evidence that your public finance system is not working. So we're testing that, but we'll still do it within that grant framework because that's all what is there and that's all what's available. The provincial PAC function and budget, I'll ask Ms. Hunter to respond. We used to conduct what we call district health expenditure reviews. That does an analysis of how much is allocated to districts and drill it down to primary health care, and it gives a sense of what the per capita expenditure is. And I think she will probably be able to share with you this normative framework that we've had for years. The mental health plan, like I say, we've decided it's not just a plan. We're going to treat mental health patients. We're going to appoint psychiatrists. We're going to appoint psychologists. Chair, we'll do it from national. We're going to do it. We're going to treat cancer from national. In the program, we've got oncology. We'll put patients who need oncology services. And we're going to treat the school children. We'll do it from national. We're told intergovernmental relations says you can't do it, but we're going to do it. And we'll show you that it can work that way. And maybe it can be the basis of changing this whole system. We have identified, Chair, just in this past financial year, about 1,000 graduates who are available. We've looked at where they are. We've looked at administratively what it means. This year, I guess, we'll have the same number. So this number is growing by day. So we'll use those professionals to do exactly this, Chair. The quarterly targets, I think I've explained, Ms. Hunter will explain, it's an error. Honorable Masalelat, HR, procurement, financial management, you know, and the collapse. You might have heard the minister saying the four things. He keeps on repeating them over and over again. The 198 billion check can do far more. I'm convinced we need to change the system of how we finance health. Even with the 198, we can. I'm convinced we can. And CFO maybe can explain how we are going to be changing this. But we are sitting, in fact, Chair, if we do this, that which we have planned for this, for testing this, for treating patients directly, if it works, we'll use the same facilities, the same clinics, but we've identified 1,000, Jeanette is 1,000, just slightly over, it's 1,037 facilities. Those are the ones we're going to use for this purpose in the public sector. So that when you go, test us on the basis of those 1,037. If they work, then we have to enforce and say it has to work in every other province, in every other facility. Chair, the posture is that if we buy mobiles and we donate them, they are not used. They are national. If we buy anything, they say, it's from national, we won't use them. So we said, no, we will be there to use them with you. So we are changing the tone. And if that's how and what it will take, that's how I think we probably need to proceed. The HIV and AIDS, I agree, and the Demasilela, that it has actually drawn a lot of resources. And for valid reasons. But perhaps we need to look at whether, and this has been a debate, Chair, to say, should you rather be disease-focused or health systems focused. Because if you are disease focused, you chase a disease. And if you are health systems focused, your health system responds to the burden of disease. And this is what we probably have to turn around. Yes, on EMS, I'll ask Dr. Andrews to respond. And amending the laws, yes, definitely, I think that is needed, Chair. We have done that already. We've worked with the Law Reform Commission. We've got 6 bills, Chair, that are supposed to come to this Parliament. 6 bills. But I do not think that they will be in this round and in this administration. I can see, Chair, that it will not be in this administration, because it needs a lot of work. But the 6 bills are necessary if we are to change the system. The one about the Constitution, Chair, requires a political discussion, and I think it's beyond us. But it's an important issue. We can't have a Constitution that is considered the best, but it creates an intergovernmental relations process that entrenches a fiscal federal system. And I think that's probably what we may need to discuss. Chair, I nearly omitted. In this process, we're going to be appointing a Jeanette, is it 49,000 community health workers, and integrate them into the system. What held us back, Chair, is that we are just waiting for the confirmation about minimum wage. But because the discussions have been deferred, we obviously will not be able to finalize this. But we still believe that integration must proceed if we are to move. Oncology crisis in KZN, Ms. Rennie will provide an update. She's been appointed to help with the provincial response, and in particular, this matter together with Dr. Anban Pile, Jorgen Pile. I beg your pardon. The clinic, Ms. Hunter will talk about the clinic and Manapo in particular, and some of the things that they've been doing in the IDF clinic. The Mpumalanga, like I said, Chair, I've got a photos, and I've got lots of them. And Chair, even photos from this province, it's not confined to, it cuts across the country. And I'll share with you. You'll see for yourself, and this is why I say it has to do with this 9 billion that has been cumulative, which must be absorbed somewhere, and it's a reality. CCMDD, Dr. Pile will respond together with a Tower Hospital. The clinics, Chair, we are focusing on those. In fact, this program that where we're going to use 1,037 clinics to look after the vulnerable groups, because we targeted them, we said we'll look at them, and we're going to work with this group that we've identified. We will also bring in more expertise to try and make this. These are actually our employees that provinces cannot absorb. They are there, we've trained them, they've done their internship, some of them have done their concept only. It means they've worked in our facilities. We must continue to make use of their skills and be innovative in the manner in which you do that. Chair, earlier I spoke about provinces that have been subject to Section 18. I thought I needed to tell you which ones they are. It's Gauteng, Limpopo, it was Section 100, they changed to Section 18. Free State also under Section 18, Northwest under Section 18, Northern Cape under Section 18, KZN under Section 18. Western Cape has not been subjected to any Section 18 at all. Mpumalanga is not under Section 18. And Eastern Cape not under Section 18. So we actually have three provinces that have not been subjected to Section 18. And with Western Cape and Eastern Cape, you can actually see from their audit outcomes and their performance. You can see the difference. Thank you, Chair. I'll hand over to the CFO to answer. CFO Dr. Andrews Anban, Ms. Hunter and Ms. Ring.
Thank you, Chair. I think mine is mostly on the irregular expenditure and fruitless and wasteful. As you mentioned, we do have a provincial support program. We've got a specific intervention through SICA, which is the South African Institute for Chartered Accountants. At the moment, we're intervening at about five provinces. The areas of intervention is commuted overtime, immovable assets, movable assets, revenue, irregular, fruitless and wasteful. What we've been seeing is that there has been some increase reported on irregular expenditure. In many instances, provinces were qualified on irregular in that they could not even quantify the exact amount of irregular. Especially in Free State and Eastern Cape, that was the case. The reason why Free State and Eastern Cape has gone out of the qualification matters is that they were able to quantify properly the irregular expenditure. The other issue we're also seeing with SICA is that at least now we can have some pushback to the auditor, because in many instances, if it was raised as irregular, then province would have accepted to be irregular. Just in national, for instance, if there's a finding of irregular expenditure, we actually investigate to make sure is it really irregular, and if there's a technical accounting issue, how to address it. So you're right, to some extent the irregular has increased. And we're trying to address it with a psycho problem. The other issue is just that to reduce your irregular expenditure from your financials, you need to show that there has been some investigation done, and that this expenditure is either condoned by the accounting officer, if delegated, or by the provincial and national treasury. And that program is ongoing. I'm worried in provinces like the Northern Cape and the Northwest, where irregular expenditure is still at quite high levels. Mpumalanga has arrested it, Eastern Cape has arrested the irregular levels. But we're intervening as far as possible, and trying to assist those provinces. It's not always, it's not always easy to be exactly sure, when they do the supply chain matters, that if they do it properly. In KZN, for instance, there's quite a few contracts that have been irregular. They have advertised, but because of some challenges on those supply chain matters, the irregular contract continues. So if it was declared irregular in 1 year and you keep on having that contract, it remains irregular, all the expenditure associated with that, although there's little that you can do with the current supply chain. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, DG, and thanks, Chair. In response to the questions, honourable members, with regards to the reduction in the number of indicators, we have reduced the number of indicators, as the honourable member has pointed out. This is actually in keeping with best practice that you collect a minimum set of data so that you reduce the burden on providers who have to actually collect the data. And it is towards that end that we've been steadily streamlining the number of indicators we've been having in the APP. However, there's also been a number of challenges that provinces have been facing with regards to audit risks. So there was always also strong pressure from the provinces, but also the burden on to collect data which rests at the facility level. We have, however, ensured that the number that the indicators we should collect to meet our obligations in terms of the MTSF and ministers reporting obligations, we're collecting more indicators than we actually should. We also have other programmatic indicators which we collect and which we do monitor and report on. but which are not audited, but which we use and which provinces use to monitor programs and to improve programs, make improvements constantly, and to see where we're going wrong. With regards to the NHI evaluation, we have submitted further to the last meeting where we visited, where we reported on the previous quarter report. We have submitted to Parliament a copy of each of the individual. After every year, we've been doing a evaluation for the pilot phase, and we've submitted a copy of all four reports, all the reports that we've done. For the final year, year five, we haven't done a report because we were busy planning the huge evaluation, which we've put out on a tender. The provider has been appointed. They're already quite well into the evaluation, so the evaluation is underway. It's a big end evaluation, which will be very rigorous and do an in-depth study of what was achieved, what was not achieved, and as well as identify best practices, as well as identify challenges and what we can avert as we move into phase two. That final report should be done latest by the end of September. So we expect by August we'll have a final report on that study. With regards to the question on emergency medical services, obviously for every... When provinces fail to comply with legislation, they must be held accountable and face consequences for the failing. National has a number of mechanisms that it has put in place to address emergency medical services. There's been a number of sets of regulations which have also been passed and which is monitored and followed up on by the directorate in the department. And there's also a National Committee on Emergency Medical Services who monitor and try to oversee what departments are doing. Quarterly, there's also a subcommittee of the Technical Committee of NHC that meets, gets feedback on what happens in provinces and reports to the Tech NHC. And where there are issues where we feel it needs to be brought to attention of the National Health Council, we then also take it to the National Health Council to make the MECs aware of it so that there can be consequence management. I think that's all from me. Maybe Dr. Pillay wants to add on the regulations on the Act side.
Thank you, Chair. I think I had two questions. The one relating to the indicators and as they are linked to the NHI policy and phase two. If you look at the section relating to phase two in the white paper, you will see that the key activities is the establishment of committees or structures that will be responsible for various aspects of the NHI. Those are the benefits committee, the committee relating to tertiary services, training and development, committee relating to health technology assessment, amongst others. So we have already put out a gazette calling for nominations relating to each of these committees. And once that's finalized, we will then appoint these committees. The second was the establishment of the fund. In order for us to establish the fund, we must have the legislation in place. So given that the legislation is not in place yet, National Treasury has agreed with us that they would fund they would provide funding through the indirect grant, which we currently are using, and will expand that over time as the fund becomes established as a legal entity. In terms of contracting, which is the other function within this, you will see that we are piloting the capitation model for GPs, which is the 10 million, which is in the indirect grant. The idea is that rather than paying general practitioners on a fee-for-service model, we will be testing the capitation model, which is the other aspect, which is in phase two. Phase 2 also talks about the HPRS system, and our APP explains how the HPRS is being rolled out across facilities in the country. In addition to that, the accreditation of providers is part of this phase. During this period, we would obviously be accrediting providers in line with the Office of Health Standards Compliance doing an assessment. And then the last area is the legislative reform, which is something that we're doing as part of the bill. In the NHI bill, you will notice that we would also be recommending amendments to other pieces of legislation in order to comply with the policy. Chair, the issue around CCMDD that you spoke about is absolutely correct. The National Treasury had given us in the previous financial year 100 million rand for the NHI pilots for CCMDD only in the pilot districts. That was wholly inadequate, and we had to go to donors in order to augment that funding, which we did. In this financial year, when we went back to Treasury and explained that this program has expanded massively and patients want to be on the program, National Treasury said, well, the provincial departments must co-fund this. The DG then appealed to Treasury that it cannot be that the funding for the CCMDD is so low. And after much debate and toing and froing, we managed to get a funding of 360 million, which is still inadequate because actually, even for the target that we have, we'll need approximately 600 million. So the donors are going to co-fund because the provinces say they don't have funding for it. So that's what the challenge is currently with CCMDD. The patients see the benefit, the health system is benefiting, but provinces say, well, we have no money, this is a project from National, you go find some money from somewhere else. So donors see the value of it, and we've been able to convince them. But it's not a sustainable way for financing to happen, and Treasury has not come to the party on it, unfortunately. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon to you, and good afternoon to the honourable members. With regard to the budget for the district health system, yes, we have an average budget across all provinces now of 46%. We have proudly grown this budget in the past 4 years from an average of 27% to where it is now. Chair, unfortunately, I don't have the individual provincial breakdowns with me now to say how each province contributes to this, but I can say that it is not equal. We've been working on this growth in the CFO forum where we meet with the provinces, and this is how we've been able to urge provinces on to steadily increase this budget. So yes, no, not all provinces, this is an average, not all provinces are where we would want them to be, but we're still progressively working with the provinces. I do want to say, Chair, that we can see the difference in the district health system, that this increase in funding for the district health system has affected. We have grown since 2015 to now, the ideal clinics from naught to 39 point something. If I round it off, we now have 40% of ideal clinics. And these clinics are indeed ideal because they are checked by the Office of Health Standards Compliance. The DPME also goes to do unannounced visits when we give them their report. And every report from the DPME has come back so far to declare the scores we've been giving our clinics to be indeed that in when they physically visit the clinics. But we must remember that 40% is still just 40%, and that means 60% of clinics are not ideal. I must also say that Gauteng province is our champion province here, because if I round off their percentage, 80% of their clinics are ideal. Chair, for all the clinics in this country, see, 3,400 plus, we now have three-year infrastructure plans. So we know the situation with each of our clinics, and we can see in terms of the infrastructure budgets where they have put the clinics in the next 3 years to fix those, because the rest of the 40% are the examples what you're talking about in the Eastern Cape, two rooms that now probably serves 10 times the population it served before. And the irony is, city of Joburg, a very urban district, has exactly the same problem. West Rand, tiny, tiny clinics that now serve big populations, and those are the clinics that we've got on the infrastructure plan for upgrades, Chair. But even though I worked with the CFO, national CFO, provincial CFOs to grow the district health system budget, it came from the same pot. There was not a bigger pot. And one can actually see the effect it has on the hospitals, because the facility you're talking about, Chair, Mafumadi Manapo in the Free State, it's indeed in dire straits. And unfortunately, there's a lot of them. So we need to sit and do the same planning. And Chair, I can't even blame the provinces here, because provinces are hamstrung by that centralizing of their, not just their budget, but what they can do with budgets. Whether they can appoint when there's vacancies, whether they can assign funding for infrastructure. And so we've got a last year for the first time with a minister, we went to the president's coordinating committee where the premier sit to actually, but we presented on clinics and we'd like to go back and also present on the hospitals to show the effects of hamstringing health budgets, the real effect it has in terms of staff available for services and the infrastructure and thus the impact that it has on quality services, Chair. I think, yeah, I can stop there.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Honourable Members. Thank you, DG. With regard to the oncology services in KZN, I have to say that the province is reporting that the situation is being turned around. I will talk to two focus areas, the first one being equipment and then the services. The crisis that was reported was mainly at the Addington Hospital. At that time, Addington had two machines which were non-functional. Subsequently, National Health facilitated in procuring one brand new machine for Addington Hospital. The machine has been shipped into the country now and is awaiting to be installed at the hospital. The delay with the installation is related to the decommissioning or disposal of one of the old machines. So there were delays with procurement processes because, as the DG said, KZN is under Section 18 of the PFMA, of the Provincial Treasury. So our information as of today is that they finally agreed to issue an order to decommission or dispose that machine. So that puts a delay in the timeline with regard to the installation of the new machine with 2 weeks, but we're still within the initial estimated period. So they expect the first patients to be treated in Addington in June. So it would be the new machine that is procured and the repair of one of the old non-functional machines. So both of them will be functional by end of June and they will start treating patients in June. That was Addington. So and then they have three functional machines in Nkosi Albert Luthuli. They did have challenges with oncologists there. And now they have signed an SLA with the VET consortium, which is now giving them oncologists that are servicing the patients there. They do accept as a province that they do have a backlog of about 200 patients that they are still dealing with. Over and above the two hospitals, they have Grace Hospital, which has one oncology machine and four oncologists. So Grace Hospital has been functioning well. There was never a crisis. It's just that now with the pressure from Nkosi Albert Luthuli and Addington, they experienced an increased workload. So that is a short report, Chairperson, in terms of KwaZulu-Natal. Another matter which was a crisis at that time was their relationship with the university, also in terms of losing registrars and all, a whole lot of other head of departments. They have now appointed almost all of them. The ones that are still outstanding would be where a person was given an offer of a job and then they declined because of other reasons and they are continuously recruiting. So they are of the view that they are on the recovery period. Thank you, Chair.
In listening to the responses, I honestly think there's no need for a second round. But there are issues that I think is the last one. There are machines that they have procured in KZN on oncology. I don't know which, whether I think there were about six of them. I don't know whether you do go physically. I would appreciate if that monitoring can be so that we don't, when issues are, even those machines, if they are functioning well where they are located. The only thing, teacher, on my side in the presentation, we even asked this question to entities. There's a high-level report, a high-level commission that was commissioned by the Speaker for Parliament, which have got some serious things that are said by our people and recommendations. I don't want to ask if you have gone through that, but I would appreciate if as this department you can look into that, because we are looking into that, because it also talks about if the legislation is assisting the sector to function well, so that we are then able to look into that. We will. It's quite a difficult sector. I'm out of order. I think we will then have to look into some of those things. We'll allow members to ask the questions, but in bearing in mind that some of the issues that have been raised, that we then have to ourselves to follow up and to look into them. Honourable Wilson, Honourable Ndaba, and James. Kaloku ndiyabona bethunana mandingaboni ukuba ngubani uphakamisileyo. I'm humbly requesting. Allow me to chair the meeting.
Must I continue? Oh, thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Just a couple of things I wanted to raise, because obviously we've had presentations over 3 days now, and obviously there's questions coming up from, we're going back into old presentations. One of the things I needed to question, please, is that 28 million rand, you've got 28 million rand in litigations against the department at the moment. We believe that 1 billion has been paid. Where is that reflected in the APPs, or particularly in the budgets? Where is that going to come from? Excuse me. And I know that came from the was the AG report, eh? Yeah, the AG report. Concerning, because it's indicative of failures of in hospitals, doctors, care and equipment. I know a lot of these are still going to court and will require judgments, but 28 million rand has got something that must be planned for, or certainly a percentage of it. And I just want to go to the NHI pilot projects. Are these pilot projects still running? And I'm dealing here... We've employed, in the pilot projects, doctors have been employed. Are those doctors still employed? Are those pilot projects still running? And I ask this because Limpopo, and again I'm going back to Limpopo, have just laid off the 30 doctors who were on the pilot project. When we are desperately, desperately, desperately short of doctors, they lay off the 30 that were employed on the pilot project. And that's really concerning. And just in brief, thank you. It's been an interesting presentation, and I know it's been a long one, and I know that we do tend to nail the department, and where it would appear that we've got a situation where the province is wagging the dog. The provinces are wagging the dog. We've got it back to front. They seem to be dictating what you will do, not the other way around. And I mean, that's maybe a little bit harsh, but that's certainly the impression that we're getting, is the provinces actually don't give a damn what you said. They're going to do what they want to do anyway. And in terms of, thank you that you are targeting children, elderly and disabled first, and you mentioned that you are using the grants system for that information. I just really am going to be interested to find out how ultimately the NH fund NHI fund is going to cope with 17.5 million grant recipients because they will be the first people who will have to be accommodated in your fund. That's 30% of the pop, or 25% of the population already. But we'll see how that one plays out as time goes. Thank you.
Bundela?
Chair, Honourable Ndaba.
Chair, let us speak.
Honourable James.
Thank you, Chair. I am glad that the oncology crisis is still an oncology crisis until it is resolved. Because, as I said, we know what is happening on the ground. The report is not what's happening on the ground. This is a real concern. I just want to register that again. But secondly, Chair, I don't think it's fair for the department to say when we raise our concerns, especially with regards to listeriosis and the company that is from outside that delivers that works with the company that's now under review. It is unfair for the department to say to us now, tell me which company is that. We are giving you the information. Please investigate. You should have your environmental health workers or your detectives. You said your detectives to go and look at how does Pick and Pay make his pelone? Where do they get that I can't remember what whatever they have that they make use of to make pelone? Where do they get it? Because we understand that they get it from the very same company. That company is the distributor. She's not the first one who heard it. I also heard about it, and I'm surprised that you are throwing it back to us. You have your people that can investigate. Let them investigate. Let them see. Let these companies. Let your people go out and walk and go to these shops and to these butcheries. See how do you make. Where did you get this? So that when you come back, you can give us information and verify it and say, no, this is how they do it. Not come and throw it back at us. I don't think that is fair. Unfortunately, you have these people that, you know, these very highly, competent people that are in the country that can assist you in terms of checking exactly what are they using, where do they get the ingredients to make the pelone. That's the word I was looking for, Chair. Thank you, Chair.
Did you?
Thank you, Chair. I'll start with the last point, Honourable James, and maybe be blunt. And I'm going to again say that unless if it's new information, because if it's about the imports from Brazil, is that what it's about? Yes, that's why I wanted to know whether can we get information, because the issue we're investigating that I'm aware of is this one about imports from Brazil, and that one is a matter of investigation. Even with the WHO people have been helping us find answers. That's why I was asking, because I thought it's a matter that was already known, because, Chair, in the joint sitting, I thought that matter came up. If it didn't, and this is a separate matter, I think it would be very helpful if we had a sense of whether it's a separate matter. That's why I was saying, can honourable members, if they have a sense, share that with us. We are also doing some investigation, Chair, if honourable members could allow me. We are, like I say, investigating, Chair, other sources. Listeriosis, Chair, I can give you reports. Countries have listeriosis. The difference with South Africa is that it became a problem in epidemic proportions. I can show you the report about the U.S. and their annual cases of listeriosis. I can share that report. You'll see that you get listeriosis. They've got more cases than we have. But if you compare that per population, you'll see that it's insignificant. but they have a lot of cases, far more than we have. We do. So it would be good, Chair, to understand whether is there a particular signal that we can follow. But we can ask our agriculture colleagues to share that information if they have. On the first point about oncology, Chair, the response that Ms. Rainey was responding to was about KZN only. But if you look in the plan, we are going to provide oncology services as part of NHI. We've provided for that, Chair. It is in the APP. But we have prioritized particular groups. We've prioritized women, Chair, for cervical cancer and breast cancer. We're not going to do it for everybody. We've prioritized children for pediatric cancer. We're not going to do it for everybody, but we'll not be able to respond to the problem at national level for everybody, but we want to reduce the burden. With regard to litigation, Honorable Member, I wasn't sure of the figure, whether you're saying 28 million or 28 billion. Is it billion or million? Yes, if it's 28 billion, it's a consolidated figure of provinces. And maybe, Chair, let me just share with you what we've decided to do. We've decided to respond in three ways. There are three interventions that are being considered to reduce this significant drain of resources in the public sector. The first one, Chair, is a legal response. The legal response is through mediation. We are working with the Department of Justice. In fact, we've asked them to train mediators for us. We have revised our forms so that people who come to our facilities, in fact, we started by asking provinces to standardize their forms. Because when you go to one province and you go to different hospitals, they've got different forms. The admission forms have been standardized for every province. But what you will get from now onwards, for each form that has been standardized, there'll be an addendum. An addendum is meant to give people an opportunity to opt for mediation. But it doesn't take the rights of people to sue, but at least it reduces that burden. The second is the experience we learned from Mpumalanga, Chair. What Mpumalanga did, they set up a legal team and they looked at their litigation cases and they picked up, I think they've been able to save how much? Over 200? I'm not sure of the figure. Over 200 million, Chair, just by identifying one frivolous litigant, two fraud. We are seeing the same in Eastern Cape. So what we did, we asked both to at least share the experience with others so that they can follow the same route. In fact, what we picked up is that in one province, it was just a five lawyers, five firms, not even based in Eastern Cape. Some come from Gauteng, milking the system, both in Eastern Cape and Mpumalanga. So we're following the same route in Gauteng at the moment. But, Chair, that has been also linked to the law enforcement because those who have been identified, like, for instance, some of the claims they were making don't exist. The patients don't exist at all. So it's just outright fraud. So those amounts are as a result of fraud, but also a thuggery. The second, Chair, is, I said, the administrative intervention. Now, you'll realize that the files go missing. And we worked with a couple of provinces. We took donor money, bought them a filing cabinet, introduce new filing arrangements, I think we can share that data with you. And then we said, okay, within the grant, you know, the infrastructure grant, could they use the same money to at least install these? Chair, the response has been disappointing. There's only one province that responded, actually, in that way, and that's Free State. And you'll see in their audit outcomes that there's been some improvements. You'll see that they also got a positive audit outcomes, including a clean audit in one district where the AG was looking at their data and the disclosures. They've done very well in that area. So we encourage others to do exactly the same. The third area, like I said, administratively, is the system, the HPRS that we've introduced. So we took this and shared with the Department of Justice. They've asked us to work with their legal team to start the mediation process. The provinces are sitting with Ms. Reni at the moment to do exactly what Mpumalanga and Eastern Cape did, by having a panel of lawyers who can help them chase all these lawyers who have been claiming for patients that don't exist. The last part, Chair, is law reform. A law reform commission has presented a bill, the state liability bill. So the state liability bill is being amended, and we're hoping that for long term, if we look at the state liability bill, it might be a solution to most of the litigation problems that we have. About the vulnerable group, yes, that's, we'll see with the results as we come to report as to how well we are doing. And just a slight correction, like we said, we've been doing annual reviews, not evaluation. It will be the first time that we do the evaluation that Dr. Andrews referred to. Thank you, Chair.
We have been, I'm just reminded, and I'm happy that Frank is here. Maybe he can also remind us. Towards the end of last year, whether it was September or October, we're in the National, in the old Assembly dining hall after a presentation or report by the department, where we requested the report on the assessment on the pilot, the report on the pilot side. And we were given that. I'm just reminding ourselves, we must check in our documents. We were given that. If maybe we can't find it, I'm not quite sure if the department will still be kind enough to resend it. But I'm humbly requesting that we do that. That is being done. Because I don't want us to leave here with the impression that maybe the members whom maybe Honorable Wilson may be one of those that may haven't received it. I don't think that it's really going to be important when you come back, whether September, whatever time that you're going to come back, even if before, if that is permissible to regulation, give us a detail, a breakdown on some of these issues that we have raised. I'll make an example. Well, that falls, an example is going to fall under the overall report on the pilot site. Details of clinics, hospitals that have been revitalized, hospitals that are in a dire state. Because remember that we don't go and conduct oversight as we would have liked. Parliament won't allow me to just say, when we see something, say we want to we want to go here, there are restrictions, there is a problem, program. It's a very frustrating situation, but I think it will assist so that when we go to our oversight, for instance, I know in my province which institutions, public institutions, are of. I know they may have challenges, but I know it's Cecilia Makiwane, it's Livingston Hospital, it's Frey, then with the exception of the Nelson Mandela and the Academic Hospital. So I'm just making an example so that members, when they conduct their oversight or when they're in their constituency time, they are able to go and then look into this. But also, so that when you say the X hospital is revitalized, I'm able to come back to you and say, but I was there. What's the story? So I'm saying that is going to be very important. I'm raising that because we health by its nature is very emotive. It's a very emotive subject, and therefore to calm down the emotion, the information, and I still repeat, the information must not be too general, because when the information is too general, it creates suspicion. So assist us, because you coming here, you are to assist us. I'll be very interested if we can get the sample of this standardized form, so that we are aware of that. And I'm sure this example of Mpumalanga, I was looking at Honorable Mashalela, I said, Mpumalanga, I'm sure things are happening, that there can be positive things that are said by one of provinces that at times we would have, we know that there are negative things that are happening there. We are preparing for a budget vote. And in us preparing for a budget vote during the time, we'll still find a need of calling you back so that we are able to get more clarity, so that we are able to, maybe you may have misunderstood us in other areas, but I still maintain, and I want to be told if I'm wrong, that when a report is too general, it creates emotions that are unnecessary. I have been saying that even to entities. On IT, please look into this. I'm trying to check which hospital, which province was on TV. We're shown a whole room, Northwest, a whole room full of fires. It was said at times it's raining. Please, I know it's Northwest. I don't know which are the others. So it may be Northwest. Maybe Gauteng has got the same problem. Maybe Eastern Cape has got the same problem. The last thing is, I become uncomfortable. I'm coming from Eastern Cape. If you say we are improving because of the unqualified report, when on the ground there are serious challenges, then you want to strike. I'm making an example about a province where I am forever continuously phoned that there is a problem. I hear you talking about the stability, which is fine. But you have raised something that is very, very fundamental. And maybe Honorable Mashalela and Honorable Ndaba, who were once in the legislature, this thing that relationship between us and the legislature. At one point, I was called to order by Honorable Mashalela. I said, no, we must call premiers here. He said, no, premiers are accountable to the NCOP. They're not accountable here. But I agree with you. There are things that we must do differently for us to them. And I hope that this program that you people said you are going to do, the cancer, if I'm mistaken, if I'm correct, the mental health and the school health, you said school health, you are going to do from national to, I hope you are going to do it. And it must be an example. And I hope before we leave, we finish this term, we must
before we rise next year, we must be able to stand up and say, and then we are throwing it back to you, because we will still then say, but you said you are going to do ABCD and you didn't do it. So I'm still going to persuade him that we premiers, when we call departments, was we're going to call departments at some point. Departments must come with premiers, MEC of health, and MEC of if we're able to call MECs of provinces as NA when they are to go to NCOP, why is that we can't call? But there is a rule to an exception. That's what Latin is saying. There's a rule to an exception. We are in a crisis. What is it that? Because at the end, we will be found accountable. We will be. Our people will say, but you were there. You saw these things. What is it? Why is it? So that's why I'm saying, exceptional cases, exceptional things, and more challenging things. We will be done in the. I'm worried that just the minister is not here today. It's a. So that he should have been here listen to questions and responses, so that we are then able, I'm not implying that he's not going to be informed, but I would have been appreciated that the ministry, both the minister and the deputy. But when I asked, I was told that the minister is answering questions in the NCOP. But I thank you very much. It has been a marathon of 3 days. It has been quite challenging, but the sector itself is a challenging sector. Tichi is there?
I apologize maybe if I said something offensive earlier to honorable members. It wasn't intended. I was just saying that we already have information about a particular country, and if there was any other information that was outside that, would have appreciated if it was shared with us.
No, I think the apology is accepted by the MP. Those that can find the report of the assessment of the pilot, try and get it, or send it to all friends.